So yeah, this parable happened. It's one of those difficult parables that we look at and we try and almost wriggle around our discomfort by wondering, what in the world is Jesus telling this parable for? Why is this very problematic character, main character, there? It's very unlike many of his other parables, where it's the kingdom of heaven is like, God is like. In this one, if we're not careful, we will throw it out and its lessons with it, because it makes us uncomfortable. That Jesus tells us the story of this problematic manager will be nice. We form extra narratives even. We write things that aren't there. We try and almost shift things so that we're more at ease with this person. Well, he was just readjusting to actual levels what his master had overcharged his tenants. Did Jesus say that in the parable? No. We have no idea if that was true. What we do know is what's in the parable, and that's why Jesus tells it, to have us wrestle, to listen to it. It's not easy to deal with it, but it's so much better to deal with it. This week we had an outbreak of flies in the building. A lot of little flies all throughout. And you could stand there and ignore them to a point. But after about 20 minutes of them landing on you, landing on your screen, or just buzzing around your head, you can't deal with it, you can't ignore it anymore. And that's why problematic parables can't be ignored, but can be understood. Think about this. Martin Luther struggled with the gospel, with the book of James. Just outright struggled. He called it the epistle of straw, saying that there was no depth in it. And yet, when you read Luther's writings, he doesn't advocate pulling it out of Scripture. To ignore or set aside those things we struggle with ignores the real problem and doesn't allow God to work in a beautiful manner and way. And so you need to engage it. Engage in the discomfort and engage in these characters of the rich man and his manager. The manager who's accused of malfeasance of some sort or other. And again, with parables, don't go down the rabbit holes. Don't wonder what he did. Don't wonder, is he selling at a knockdown rate? And just don't. He's accused of malfeasance. He loses his job. That's the basis of the parable. Let it be. We have no need to worry about, was he innocent or not? He accepts the punishment and is like, well, you caught me. So don't worry about that either. The truth is that the parable isn't about what he did to get fired, but how he responds in that moment. But even that response makes us a little squirmy in our seats, because he doesn't go and cash out all the mismanaged funds he's had in a hidden offshore account and walk in there with a bag full of cash and say, oh, sorry, boss, you know, thought I could get away with it. Here's the restitution. Here's the money back. He doesn't do that. He goes even further. You're firing me for mismanaging and possibly taking money? Well, I can't dig. I'm too prideful to beg. So what's left to me? Well, I'm just going to be the same person that I was before. I'm going to sit down with all of my master's debtors and do them a favor so that they will go into life owing me a favor. So he sits down and he sees not just the top people who owe his boss. He sees every last one of them. And we infer, because his boss is a rich man, that he didn't just see five people. He saw a lot. And each time he goes through and he measures what they owe and he knocks it down. He decides to use his position to solidify his base. And he works hard at it. He sees all of those people. And here's the interesting part. Because what is his boss going to do after this? You see, he's outsmarted his boss, fired him. Because what can happen? His boss calls him in and, oh, he forgave everybody's debts, but not all of the debt, just a portion. He could come and try and restore the debt. Boy, that'll make him popular. So he has to essentially eat that loss. But then we look at it and look at his response, and we again squirm in this parable, because the master looks at this and kind of does, wow, that was it's pretty good. He uses that self-preservation and then gets a nod almost from his former master. He's savvy and slick and does what he can. And that's where we get a little bit of problem. Because when we look at this, we don't want to emulate this man. When we look at this and we think, well, what if this happened to someone I know? What if they did that? Would we make them into an outcast? Would they be societally shunned? Probably. So why is it that Jesus tells this parable? Where is that drawn out understanding for us? The fact is, the manager doesn't get commended by his former master for his perceived brilliance, but the fact that he acts shrewdly, the fact that he works so hard to secure his time after, the fact that he goes out and does so much. The master's response is more of what happens when somebody beats you at a game of chess. Somebody beats you at a board game. Maybe not Doris. You don't want to acknowledge that they beat you, but you give them a nod because they played the game, and they played it well. Yeah. Years ago, we played, my brother and sister-in-law are big into board games. They have a closet full, and we were playing, and my brother and I we play by the rules, but we don't play by the spirit of the game. And my sister-in-law and Sarah got very mad at us because our goal was to play within the rules and win the game. Spirit of the game? No, we're gonna win. And so at the end of the game, there was this moment where Rob looked at me and I looked at him and I said, you were, and he said, and you were, and the two of us nodded at each other. That's what the master is doing. He's not saying what the guy did was good or okay. He's not approving of it. He is marveling at the effort and the shrewdness of it. And here's where this is perhaps one of the most brilliant of Jesus' movements with the parables. Because it's not the manager and the master that we look at here, or should look at, but the willingness, the extraordinary willingness to secure one's future that happens here. This manager sees all of his master's clients and risks jail time. He does all of that, does all of that work. He racks his brain for a solution. And all for a nefarious purpose. He works so hard to secure his future in this world. Jesus doesn't set these men up as positive examples, but as examples of how hard we work in our world to secure the things we have here and now. How hard we work. I've got a little sticker coming that says, "Be careful or you'll end up in the sermon." I should probably put that on Liam's door. The fact of the matter is, we work so hard. We do so many things to obtain stuff. You ask a teenager, okay, you want new shoes, you want those shoes, you know. I guess Air Force Ones are the big shoes right now with teens. Don't ask me why, they're white. Anybody buying a teenager bright white shoes is making a mistake. But what will kids do to get those shoes? They will mow lawns, they will clean gutters, they will pick up dog excrement, they will do what they can to get the money to get those shoes. Boy, and the lengths and efforts they put in, and it typifies how hard we work for the things we have here. But how hard do we work for the things that aren't here, but are there? How hard do we work? How hard out of the box do we think? Think about how savvy the solution this manager comes up with. This is not a normal in-the-box solution. He goes the extra mile to come up with it. Then he does all the work. He does all of that. As you think about it, do we do all of the work we could for God's kingdom? Think about what could have happened to this manager had he worked as hard at being a quote-unquote good manager for his master as he did trying to secure his own future. Now, effort for humanity can run into a lot of problematic math. Some of you are familiar with the adage of giving 100%, or for those of us who are younger, keeping it 100. But we also have phrases like, you need to give 110%. Okay, that doesn't really exist. You give all you can and that's 100. But, or my favorite, football is 80% mental and 40% physical. I might have known a coach who could have created that. The fact is, we don't necessarily have the right elements and efforts in the right places. Think about this. We can get a phone call quicker, faster. We can FaceTime with anybody and everybody. And cancer still kills. We can get a faster signal over the internet. We can get a faster computer. And there are children in this world who go to bed hungry, who don't have clean water. You think about that. This is the brokenness that occurs in this parable. How hard we work building up AI technology so that your whatever account on whatever streaming service knows what shows you like to the nth degree, can streamline your commercials when you watch them. And yet we can't solve the basic principles of caring for the least of these, looking out for those in our world who God has told us to care for. Imagine, if you will, a world in which we engage in our efforts in the correct direction. There's always this line, this moment, it's an overused trope in every cop show or whatever, where you have the troubled youth and then you have the detective or officers look at the kid and say, you know, you got all this, you're so brilliant, you're so smart, and if only you were doing something good with it. Happens in every show. Imagine what would happen in our world if instead of feeding what we want, instead of securing our own little piece of the pie, we worked our effort, our use of our minds, our savviness towards building up God's kingdom to help others. There's that final statement Jesus leaves us with at the end of the parable. No slave can serve two masters, for a slave will either hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. But again, as I've said a hundred times, the English from the Greek isn't the best translation because it's not wealth, it's possessions. It's possessions, things we can't take with us. The reality is this parable makes us a little uncomfortable because when we really dig down, we see that our actions, our work, could be so much better served towards building up God's kingdom. As I alluded during the children's message, Liam and I and Barb have had this conversation a few times where I've said, if you spent as much time trying to do your chores correctly as you do avoiding them or not do them well, I'd be a lot less stressed out, you'd be a lot less frustrated, and you've had a ton more free time. And I think that conversation went in one ear and out the other. But the hope is, as with this parable, is that we'll listen and we'll adjust, so that we can build up his kingdom and work towards the things of the next life. Amen. Brothers and sisters, let us